Welcome to Hutch on Hunting. This is Bruce Hutchin, your host for this podcast. Also, I'm the CEO of Hutch on Hunting Research and Information. I'm a digital scouter. And at hutchonhunting.com, you will see all my offerings and how I cover the state of Colorado for all big game species. Please reach out to me at hutchonhunting@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to set up a free discovery call where we'll talk about what you're looking for and how I can help you. hutchonhunting.com brings you the finest Colorado-specific research tools.
Hey, today we're heading down to Tennessee, and I've got a couple of friends that are going to tell you about Oliver Trailers, and they're also going to tell you about their hunting adventures and what they do outside of the hunting world. Aaron Walters and Josh White, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bruce, thanks for having us on. My name is Aaron Walters. I work for Oliver Travel Trailers. I do a lot of the marketing, the videos, the photos, manage our social media, but when I'm not at Oliver Travel Trailers, I spend as much time out in the woods with my family and just hunting and fishing. We just are working on wrapping up waterfowl season down here in Tennessee. And we've been busy the past couple weeks and haven't gotten to spend as much time out hunting as we would like to. But, you know, we've been busy with this Oliver Travel Trailer here. So Josh can tell you a little bit more about that, but I'll pass it over to him.
Hi, I'm Josh with Oliver Travel Trailers. I'm one of our sales associates here. Worked with Oliver for about 4 years now. I'm just like Aaron when I'm not here, showing the trailers, running with dealers, things like that. I'm normally out in the outdoors, either hunting or fishing myself, me and my son. We'd rather be doing that than anything else. If I could hunt and fish for a living, we'd have it made, wouldn't we, Aaron?
We would,
so,
for sure.
That's kind of our little background. And thank you again for having us here.
Well, it's my pleasure. And Aaron and I met. I was interviewing people to be intern for the show and to find somebody that would work, with me in the back end of producing Hutch on Hunting, because it's amazing. In just a month, I think I got over 20 responses for people wanting to be on the show. And I'm only doing one release, publishing one show a week. So I've only got, 30 more people to step up, and we'll be filled for the year. And so that's exciting. And also it's exciting because I go to different places. Yesterday, I interviewed Joe Byers. He's the editor-in-chief at BowhuntingNet. And Joe's show will be coming up soon. So that's one thing nice about podcasts. You can sit and visit, find out about new things, and share tips, techniques, and share the hunting tradition with an audience that spans Canada and the United States. So, guys, let's just start it off. Since you're sitting in a pretty nice rig there, let's talk to us about Oliver Trailer and why you think outdoors people specifically would benefit from taking a look at Oliver Trailers.
Well, one thing about the Oliver stands out is obviously the looks of it. It is a higher-end trailer. Quality is second to none to any trailer in the market. I know myself, it would be nice to have something with all of the capabilities this trailer has on the lease that we're in for hunting. We just have a cabin. We don't have any electricity or anything like that. But with our trailers, we have off-grid capability, solar, lithium, furnace. I mean, it's a home on wheels. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if you go out for a couple weeks at a time to be hunting or fishing, you've got something that you don't have to spend all the money on in hotel rooms and high-end outdoor outfitter fees, to stay in for them to take care of you, where you can have this trailer and you're pretty much self-sufficient inside of this trailer.
Absolutely.
Now,
where
do I put my toys? Where do I put my ATV side-by-sides? Do you have rigs that are set up to be toy haulers?
We do not have a toy hauler yet. It might be something down the road. I don't know. I really don't think it's ever been into discussion. That would be the only setback I would say to an Oliver, is that we're not able to actually tow anything behind the trailer itself. But I always tell my customers too, remember, you do have a pickup truck that you can put a lot of your toys, maybe not your, you can like a four wheeler, but not a big UTV. But you know, as far as your sleeping arrangements and things like that, then all would be your go-to trailer.
So basically it's your base camp.
Correct.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, Aaron, you were going to say something before I interrupted you about the question about toy haulers.
It was along the same notes as what Josh was saying. I've actually seen owners who have like a reinforced bed box where they'll actually pull four wheelers and side by sides and things up like that. And so the capability of having that is there. But the toy hauler version, like Josh said, is you know, something over the horizon for all of our travel trailers. But Bruce, you're exactly right. This thing is a base camp. And when I think of out west hunting and big game hunting and looking at public land, that's kind of what I envision this being the hub for that. You know, we have a lot of amenities that you would find, you know, in other RVs, but, you know, we don't have to worry about the maintenance, and you get more longevity with this product over like other RVs and our competitors. So
now, how do you handle the showers? Do you have enough water capacity storage to have hot showers if you're going to hunt for 10 days?
Yeah, we do. This tank comes equipped with 32-gallon fresh, a 32-gallon gray, and then a 15-gallon black tank. And that black tank will actually be utilized by a regular like porcelain toilet. But we also have a composting toilet option as well. So that can kind of extend your usage in that atmosphere as well. So being able to take a shower is really, really important, at least for me, because I feel gross after a couple of days. So we have a standard 6-gallon Suburban tank water heater. But then we also have a Truma on-demand hot water heater as well, which both of those appliances use propane, but the tankless water heater is really, really nice, efficient, and adds a lot of hot water. So you can warm up after a long day out in the woods and stuff.
So I'm taking a hot shower inside, not outside.
Correct. Yep.
Because that does make a difference. A lot of people with sprinters, you know, they rigged up showers, but they're external, and you can have solar heat or just like my days of backpacking and, you know, for hunting, I used to have those solar, you know, showers, and it was a 5-gallon bag, and it heated up somewhat. I mean, never got hot, but it was better than cold water. That's right, for sure. And as I've gotten older, you know, the amenities are nice because it does refresh you if you're catching, you know, if you're out there fishing. If you're doing any sort of hiking at all, you're going to sweat, and it's nice after a couple of days to get clean. Now, do they have washing dryers? Is that something that you have in the facility, in the rig?
No, sir, we don't. We do have, you had mentioned outdoor showers. We actually have that capability too. We have hot water and cold water plumbed to the outside shower. So if a person did want to shower outside, they can. But we do have the capability inside the shower, which it is a wet bath with toilet, sink, shower in there. But you can shower either inside or outside of the trailer.
That's nice. And so there's no room to put one of those small mini house washer dryers in there, stack dryers.
Not currently, mainly, but one reason is because the trailer is a molded design. It's not piece by piece. So if we added anything new to the trailer, like the way it currently is, then it would be a total mold design, redesign, because every spot on this trailer is designated for a certain thing because it's a solid mold. That's actually what was actually going to get into that, the Four Seasons capability. You don't have panels. You don't have any wood in the trailer. Matter of fact, me and Aaron, we stayed in the trailer Sunday night, and it was down in the 20s, mid-20s. We stayed in the trailer, cut the furnace on, and we slept very comfortable. Actually, we got to sweating during the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Most trailers can't say that because they're not a true Four Seasons trailer. We are a true Four Seasons trailer.
Okay, so it's fiberglass then, or what's the material that it's molded out of?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually a four-piece hull. So what you're seeing here is like the inner hole. So imagine a Russian nesting doll. So two upper and outer, and then you have two inner holes as well. So all of your components will actually sit in between the inner and outer holes of the trailer. So you don't have any tanks or plumbing or anything that's exposed or hanging off the bottom of the trailer. So it's all fiberglass. It's all hand sprayed and rolled resin. And yeah, it's a very, very incredible machine at the end of the day when it's all produced.
Do I need a generator or does it come with a generator?
It doesn't come with a generator. Like Josh said earlier, you know, we have the option for lithium and solar. So we're sitting in the Legacy Elite 2, which is a 23.5-foot trailer, tandem axle. It has an upgradable option for 400 watts of solar, 640 amp hours of lithium batteries, and then an upgraded 3,000 watt inverter. So with all those kind of combined, you know, we have the capability to sit out here for, you know, weeks on end, you know, if we're using our power correctly. And then actually, I tell people we can actually use the onboard air conditioner unplugged. If you were going to run it, you know, the battery's 100% charged, you can run the air conditioner for 5 or 6 hours wide open, which this trailer is so well insulated, we're not going to need to do that. But that's the capacity that this trailer has when it comes to lithium batteries and all the upgrades. So
now, is it really a bumper hitch or a gooseneck hitch?
Bumper
hitch. Or gooseneck?
Bumper.
And so what kind of rig do I need to tow it?
Half-ton pickup truck will tow it. We have several owners that have some three-quarter tons, but half-ton pickup should be fine because the dry weight on the trailers, depending on what all options you get, the dry weight's between 4,900 and 5,200 pounds. So still fairly lightweight trailer considering it actually has four fiberglass holes, but we use an aircraft aluminum chassis on the trailer, which makes it tremendously lighter than if you had a steel chassis like a lot of the trailers on the market do.
Let's switch it back because this is a hunting show and I appreciate everything you've shared about Oliver Trailer. Before we switch it over, let's talk about how somebody, if they want more information, would get a hold of one of you guys at Oliver Trailer.
Well, they could go on our website, which is olivertraveltrailers.com. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Aaron actually handles all of that, all the social media. They can call our office. It's 888-526-3978. I know you said you're, I think, in Colorado. We're actually, I think it's this week, we have found a dealer in Denver that we're going to go through to actually carry our trailers. To the four, we're just, the point of sale is strictly Tennessee, but we actually starting in 24, we've started going through a dealer network, and we're starting in, I think it's actually this week, the RV dealership in Denver, Colorado, we actually have our trailers on site.
So they're going to be stocking dealers then?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's a good thing to do. So if I'm a hunter and I got a couple of bucks, how much couple of bucks do I really need to get a nice setup that me and three to four people can spend a week, 10 days in one of your trailers, someplace in the Rockies, hunting elk or mule deer, or up in Wyoming, hunting antelope. What's it going to run me?
Well, as we said, you know, this is a higher end trailer. It's not your standard, just run of the mill cookie cutter trailer. But the starting price for an Elite 2 is around $95,000.
Okay. So I'm going to spend $100,000.
Yeah.
Because I get sales tax. I get tax, yep, and license, correct, and all that stuff.
Yep.
So what's my warranty with that?
Your fiberglass carries a 5-year warranty. Your chassis and sub chassis carry a 5-year warranty. Your plumbing, electrical, pretty much anything that we install ourselves carries a 3-year warranty. And then your major components, which we don't produce those, but they carry normally it's like a year to 2-year warranty, whichever one the manufacturer. We try to, if we, the components that we use, we try to get the longest warranty as possible to go with them.
All right. So what product would you recommend to four guys in Oshkosh, Wisconsin to buy and head to Colorado for an early season? Now, this is a September elk hunt. What would you recommend?
As far as for the trailer or as far as their
equipment? Yeah, for the trailer. For the trailer.
Definitely the Truma air conditioner, and then also the what it comes with the tankless water heater if you get the Truma, and then the solar and the lithium.
Yeah.
Solar packs with lithium, because that'll give you the capability to run the air conditioner without being hooked up to a generator or shore power.
Sure. And then we also have additional options for an additional street awning. So we run a standard awning on the curbside, but you can upgrade to have one on the street side. And I always tell people it's nice because the sun moves. I know that in September here, it's pretty warm still. I can only imagine, at lower altitudes out there, it might be kind of warm. But with the awnings, I also like spending a lot of time outside the trailer. So we have standard quick connect LP hookups for the gas, for the propane. So you can run fire pits or grills or outside kitchens. And so those are nice to have on the outside of the trailer. And then we also have available storage baskets for firewood or coolers or anything else that you're going to carry out with you in the field. So really kind of maximizing the space and the capability of the trailer is something that Oliver keeps in mind. And as we're kind of talking about hunting and all the things that go along with this, Bruce, the Oliver name, Jim and John Oliver, they were big hunters and fishermen. And that's kind of the legacy that lives on through this trailer and through the employees that kind of work at Oliver, is that the understanding that these trailers are capable for more and to go out and to find adventure in the outdoors is important. So Jim and John Oliver were big game hunters. They were outdoorsmen. And that lives on through the Oliver family,
right.
And the sons that they left behind, who still manage the company today. They're always out on hunting trips and a lot of cool experiences through that. So the legacy and the life of the outdoors and hunting is kind of molded, no pun intended, into this trailer.
That was good. I like that.
That's my one for the day. You're welcome.
That was well done. You can tell you're from marketing. So, folks, you got to sleep someplace. You got to eat someplace. And the more you hunt, the more creature comforts are important. No question about it. And I'm not talking about especially in September, the daily deluge around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, just rain. And if you get in the high country, which the trailer probably wouldn't get up to, but anyway, you get in the high country and it might even snow. So you have to be ready in the Rockies, even in September, for any type of weather conditions. So, wall tents are great. Four season backpack tents are great. But some of my best hunts, we had a base camp with a gooseneck and probably a 25 foot, rig. And that made it so nice because we knew once we got back to camp, even if we spiked out 3 or 4 days, we got back to camp, we can resupply, we can shower, we can sleep in a bed and just relax, get recharged and head out and do it all over again. Because the way we used to hunt on a 10-day hunt in September, we used to get to base camp, get all that set up before season. Then we'd split up in groups of two, if there were six of us, and then we go up to separate basins and separate places, and we'd spike out for 3 days, 2 or 3 days. And if we scored, obviously we'd come back sooner. And if we didn't, we'd still come back, resupply. And guess what? That kept the weight in my pack down because we got pretty proficient and we were minimalist and we're hunting with bows and we got filters and we got bivy sacks and light sleeping bags and hammocks, whatever. And we made it work. And that was some of the greatest times I had hunting in Colorado. So guys, let's switch it over. As I said a couple of minutes ago, to talk about hunting and what experiences you've had that you want to share with my audience.
Sure. What do you want to know?
Well, what do you want to share? Your best stories and, why you got into hunting, what the hunting tradition means to you. And if you had to think of one hunt that really got you into hunting, you on that hunt, you became a hunter.
Sure. So my story kind of starts a little bit different than other people. I started hunting later in life. I'm 27. I started hunting 5 or 6 years ago. Always involved in the outdoors, hunt like camping and fishing and everything like that. But never, you know, out hunting and everything. But had a great appreciation and interest for it. A lot of credit goes to my father-in-law. He is a role model. He's a mentor. He's someone I, you know, aspire to be as an outdoorsman. He actually took me on my first deer hunt and, shot a 4-point on my birthday. So that was pretty cool. But my story is a little bit different than most because I actually, up until this last year had, alpha gal. So I was allergic to red meat. Which is pretty unfortunate. And a lot of people are, you know, thinking, man, I'd rather die than not ever be able to eat steak or bacon or sausage or deer or elk or anything like that. So I always tell people that, you know, if it swims or flies, then, you know, I'd go after it. So I really invested a lot of time into waterfowling, and fishing. But this last year I went through some treatments and different things and I was able to start eating red meat again. And so now the drive to go out and fill the freezer is here. So that's kind of a unique perspective where, you know, I'm limited on what I can consume. And if I did harvest it, then I, you know, would give it away. And that is a fun thing. I remember I shot the deer on my birthday and got it processed and everything and got it back and we're texting my friends and, you know, showed up after we went out to eat in Mexican and gave my friends backstrap and their eyes got really, really big. And they're like, are you serious? You give me the backstrap? And I'm like, yeah, this meat has no tangible value to me. You know, I can't eat it. And so just kind of being able to share in the harvest and the trophy is, you know, something cool for me. And I know, you know, Josh has been in the game a lot longer. So he has, you know, a lot cooler stories, but you know, it's one of those things that I'm always inspired by and passionately pursuing things in the outdoors. So
how about you, Josh?
Well, I actually have two stories that really have kept me in. One has kept me in hunting. The other one got me started. When I was younger, we always fished. My dad was a big bass fisherman. We always fished. Not competitively tournaments, but every weekend we was out fishing. And then as I got older in my teens, I deer hunted just a little bit, turkey hunted very rarely. And once I got out of high school, I took it more seriously, and I remember the first mountable buck that I shot. I was going to my stand, and I saw the buck and the doe that he was with, and we run them off out of the field. And I thought, well, there goes my hunt. And then about 30 minutes later, when the sun come up, I watched her walk out, and as the thing goes, she led him right into the danger zone. And at that point, when I started feeling the quick breathing, the buck fever, if you will, that got me hooked. And all the old timers, the guys that we hunt with in our lease, they told me if I ever lose that feeling, it's time to quit hunting because that means you're still excited about it. But a few years back, I started getting kind of down the dumps about hunting. And then I started taking my son. And then whenever he killed his first buck, and I think I was more excited than him, I tackled him whenever we found the deer. And then I started crying and he started crying and that's kept me in the hunt, kept me driving. And he actually absolutely loves the outdoors. He would rather hunt and fish than anything else instead of playing the video games all day long. So that's kind of my story. And over the last probably, I guess, 10 years, I've really focused in on the turkey hunting and deer hunting because my son is 15 now. So he really does love going. And every time I go, he's always asking, can I go? He don't like the cold, but now if he can go, he'll go with me.
Well, you got an Oliver trailer, hopefully, that you can get from the shop or something and keep them warm.
Well, that is one good thing about being an employee here. Me and Aaron don't really have to own an Oliver because we have about four or five that Oliver's own that if we wanted to take it out, they'll let us take it out at any time. Of course, out at my hunting lease, we have a cabin that we built, and it's insulated, but we have to run a propane heater, but we don't have any electricity. So we're everything's battery operated out there. We got a little generator that we use. But with an Oliver, you know, the only really thing that kind of limits you in an Oliver is your propane consumption and your water consumption. I mean, that's because everything else, it's pretty well self-sustainable.
No, you got access. If you're on muddy, bumpy, you know, back roads, you know, dirt or otherwise, you know, how much clearance do you have?
I stretched the tape because somebody was asking about clearance the other day. And Josh can speak to this a little bit. I stretched the tape, and the lowest point on the trailer is on the front steps over here, and you're looking at 16 inches. So, I mean, you have a good amount of ground clearance, and you got to remember there's nothing hanging off the bottom of the trailer. The only thing that's, you know, down there is the tube axles. So, you know, we're not talking rock crawling, but, you know, washboard roads and things like that, you know, this trailer can manage pretty well. And actually, Josh and I were driving back from Tampa, Florida this week, and I forgot something in the trailer. And so I pulled off the interstate, got into a Waffle House parking lot, went and flipped the thing off in the trailer. And the only place to turn around was to pull through and around the back of this Waffle House. And there was this, I don't know, how would you describe it? An illusionary water puddle that I drove the truck off into. And I say it was at least a 12-inch to 14-inch puddle that the truck dropped off. Oh, it was a hole. Into. Oh, yeah. It was bigger than you think it was.
It wasn't a puddle. It was a hole.
Yeah. And, you know, no issues. The trailer just kind of came right through it. When I was on a photo video shoot with our local game resource agency, they do a lot of good work, and they actually raffle off all of our travel trailer to raise conservation funds for Tennessee. So plug to them. If you want to win an Oliver, you can go buy some raffle tickets and win an Oliver. But one of the guys was wanting to get some photos and videos of the truck going through the creek. And he thought it'd be a great idea to put the trailer on the truck as well. And he asked me, he's like, is the trailer going to make it through the creek? And my question to him was, is the truck going to make it through the creek? Because if the truck makes it through the creek, the trailer's going to have no problem.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of capability that this trailer has, is it actually fits in the profile of your vehicle. It's 7 feet wide. So, you know, then again, you can tow with a 1500 or a F-150 or something like that. And it's very, very capable. So, it survived the puddle behind the Waffle House on the way home. So I think it'll be all right.
That's funny. So lessons learned, let's hit on that. And we still got about a half an hour, Josh, before you got to head out. So let's talk about lessons learned that you want to share with my audience. And, you know, some guys I talk to, you know, it's about not having a safety harness and not, you know, paying attention when they're in tree stand. Myself, I was, this is probably, let's just call it around the early 80s, we're up on a hunt, Wyoming mule deer and antelope hunt outside of Lusk. Anyway, we're up there in that country and we're camping out and having a good time. And I had a back surgery. So my buddies, you know, I just had the truck because I couldn't really get around it. And I'd hunt above streams and gullies and that sort of thing. So I get up there, and one morning I get up there early and sitting there and watching and everything. And I had my rifle loaded. The truck wasn't moving, but I did have my truck loaded. So I guess I could get a fine for that, or maybe not. I know you can have the truck and thing, but anyway, it's back in the 80s. So that was 40 years ago. And so anyway, I see a deer coming through this gully. I said, oh, that's a nice buck. And so I'm not going to shoot him out of the truck. So I have to slip out of the truck and, you know, I open the door and get my feet down. Then I go reach for my rifle and get it and have my gloves on. It was chilly. And luckily for me, the barrel of the gun was pointed right down to the ground about 6 inches away from my foot. The next thing I know, you know what I'm going to say next? I don't know to this day. I don't know how my glove hand got into the trigger guard or past it, but the truck went off. And we were back in the day, we were shooting with triggers that are under 5 pounds. And I, folks, I don't recommend that at all. You know, keep your triggers where if you have fingers and then all of a sudden you go to a glove, if that little difference of fabric can set off your trigger, you're in trouble. Because I was in trouble, and I could have put a 30-06 bullet right in my foot. And Josh, I remember, you know, reading your bio, you know, God was with me. I mean, there's no way. And I looked down, you know, and went boom, and I looked and I saw a hole and I went, thank you, Jesus. That's what I said, because he protected me. And I didn't pee my pants, but my hunt was done, obviously. So I went back to camp, made some breakfast, and we had a tag-along pop-up then, because we had a crew. I think we had four of us. One, two, three, four. Yeah, we had four of us. And so we had a pop-up and a tent, blah, blah, blah. But I just went back, and everybody came back in from the morning hunt. They said, what the heck's wrong with you, Hutch? And I said, I almost shot myself. They go, what? And I told them the story. So, folks, you never can be too careful. So my first biggest mistake was having a loaded rifle on the seat of the truck. Again, the truck wasn't moving. I was sitting, just waiting for that deer to chew up in the gully. But just don't do it. That's my lessons learned. Who's next?
I've been, you know, knock on wood, if we can find any wood in this trailer to knock on, it's all fiberglass, but I haven't had any super close calls with hunting. But on the fishing side of things, you know, my favorite time to fish is right now, when the weather's cold and the water's up, which is not always the best decision. But I can remember I have a 17-foot Old Town Tripper canoe. They don't make them anymore. They're apparently really sought after. But I do some river guiding and fishing out of it. And I took my best friend and my now brother-in-law out on a float Easter weekend. And we had just gotten, I think, like 3 inches of rain. So I thought it'd be a good idea to put the boat on the river. And it turns out, just like Willy Wonka, we were on the Chocolate River, floating down the water. And this was a float that took normally, I want to say, 5 or 6 hours. We got the whole thing done in 2.5.
Oh my goodness, you were running hard.
That should have been the maybe we should put the boat back on the trailer and go home. But back then, you know, didn't have a lot of experience. I'd only been doing it maybe a year or so, and I had a cheap, like, deployable claw anchor on a thin nylon rope that we use as our anchor. And looking back, I was like, man, you know, there was no fish that were ever going to be biting. But you float past the one hole that you always catch that one fish in. And so I was like, well, we'll drop the anchor here. Well, now I know you don't drop an anchor in moving water, especially that style of anchor, because it got hung under a log and the rope like got snatched up into the current and everything. And we were stuck pretty much. And the funny thing about this whole story is my brother-in-law was in the very front of the boat and my best friend was in the back and I was in the middle. I was kind of rowing and taking care of everything. My brother-in-law was oblivious to everything that was happening. He had no idea that we were about to die. He had no idea that like the anchor was caught under a tree. He had no idea that the water was like 3 times higher than it should be. So my best friend and I had this, you know, eye contact of mutual concern and kind of freak out for a second. And then I just kind of give him the nod and he like whips out his knife and just cuts the anchor off and all of the strength that I could to hold the boat straight in the current. So we didn't pitch sideways and tip the whole thing over. But it was kind of funny because I looked at him and he looked at me and we were just kind of like, yeah, this is it. If we keep going, then, you know, it's not going to be ideal. So he cut the anchor and I bought another one on the way home from the trip. But, you know, I think having flexibility in situations is good, but also like not being afraid to, to say, like, hey, the conditions aren't great, right? And having the acknowledgement that if we go out there, it's probably not going to be safe. Because just like you said, right, you know, almost shot myself in the foot. Well, I almost dumped three of us into the 55-degree water during river flood conditions that all three of us couldn't have come back from. So I think kind of having that awareness to kind of say, hey, today's not the day, we're going to do it again tomorrow. You know, or just kind of change your plans and not be caught up in a dangerous situation is something that shows maturity, but also, you know, shows that you take care of people who are around you. You know, so that's a lesson that I learned the hard way. So,
I guess the biggest lesson learned that I had, and it was very scary. Actually the story that I told about what got me hooked on hunting, the same exact stand also gave me my biggest lesson I've ever learned. Been raised up here in Middle Tennessee, actually in the town that was in my bio that Oliver is built in. It's nothing to go through a track of timber and see an old 2x4 stand that's growed up into the tree, you know, or an old aluminum lock-on stand, you know. I mean, it's been almost 20 years ago when this happened, but when I killed that first mountable buck that I had that got me hooked, the next week, I went and got up in the stand, and it was just a built 2x4 stand that what I thought was ratchet strapped good to the tree. And I was young. I mean, I was only about 20 years old. I just turned 40, so it's 20 years ago. I climbed up in the stand, and when the sun come up, I'm sitting here, and I'm looking, you know, looking around, and all of a sudden I heard a pop, and I didn't think much about it. I'm still sitting there, and I thought, well, it's about time to go anyway. Well, I put my gun across my the strap across the gun on my back, and I start to climb down. Didn't have a harness. And that pop was, the ratchet strap was old and dry rotted, and it popped. And the stand started going off with me to one side, and all I could see was a cedar tree, about 8-10 foot cedar tree, and I just dove off into it. And when I hit the ground, I rolled over. Didn't have anything broken or anything, but I looked at my gun. I don't know how it happened. My gun was stabbed into the ground about 6 or 8 inches, and it really scared me. You know, it's maybe not 20 years, because I was married. I married, and my son was real little, so it's probably about 14, 15 years ago. But anyway, when I rolled over, I realized, hey, you know, this could have ended really bad, and I was hunting by myself that day, so my brother wasn't with me. And ever since then, you know, we don't think about it as often, but every year since then, and no matter if I put the stand up or if I'm hunting in somebody else's stand, they gave me permission to hunt in, I check the ratchet straps. I adjust them if need be, because a tree does not quit growing. So your stand could be not sitting level like it was the year before. Your straps could be growing into the tree. I loosen them up, readjust. And not all the time, but I try to wear a harness as much as possible, because all it takes is that one time. And we don't think it'll happen to us, but it could happen. And that was my lesson learned from that day that I fell out of that tree, to make sure that everything is safe, especially now with my son going. He doesn't think about that stuff, because he's young, dumb, and stupid, as we say. But he don't think about it. All he's thinking about is killing that big buck or that big turkey. And so I always check everything and make sure that everything is right. And that's what I would tell any hunter out there. I mean, in Tennessee, we don't do the hunts like the elk hunts or antelope hunts or things like that, but we hunt a lot from stands. And otherwise, that's what I would tell anyone. Always check everything. Make sure it's steady before you start hunting.
And I've been hunting the same farm in Wisconsin since 1957. And every single year, and there's not as many people now because people bought their own land or they moved away, but there's still 5 or 6 of us that hunt there. And we just go through stand by stand and check them and put on the gator. We have a John Deere gator, throw a 10-foot ladder on there and just put that against the tree, go up the tree and check it out. And wooden stands, we just taken a chainsaw and then cut them all down. Mm-hmm. You know, because some of those stands I hunted back in the 60s and 70s and put up, you know, that long ago, just mm-hmm. plywood and 2x4s and nails, big nails, and nailed them in the tree. And amazing how much a tree grows after 40 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got trees that, you know, even with our hang-ons, you know, the chains are right into the tree now. The tree's grown right over them. And we had, let's see, I'm thinking of a concussion stand. Somebody fell out of it and got a concussion. And the point stand was a nice stand. They just rebuilt it this year. And it's a good stand. It always produces during gun season. And, you know, so we get all these stands named, but the owner talked to the people that were using that stand, said, hey, you can't use it unless you rebuild it. You can sit down there, but you can't use it because the trees had just grown and all the nails had pulled out. And, you know, it wasn't safe. So folks, if you're hearing my voice and you do whitetail hunt or even elk hunt, I know some places in Colorado that people have built stands because they don't want to carry them in. And Flat Top Mountain up in up above Glenwood Springs, there's wonderful place to kill elk. It surely is, especially early season. And there's the remnants of somebody's wooden stands where somebody carried, and it's about 5 miles, let's call it, into that mountain where the saddle is. Perfect place, just absolutely a perfect place to kill an elk. And, you know, there's old plywood stands where they took plywood and some 2x4s and just pounded them into the aspens, actually. So you got to be careful. That's the only thing I'm saying. And, you know, I'm fortunate, you know, I'm 78 years old now, had a lot of encounters, but just use your common sense and be safe. And because we all know people in our groups that have really got hurt because they didn't have a safety harness on. That's my 2 cents on that. So tell me about your favorite hunt. You know, if there's one hunt that, you know, stands out, we talked about, you know, the hunt that got you started, but, you know, man, I'd like to do that hunt again. What would that be? And we get about 10 minutes more. So.
Sure. My favorite hunt, comes from West Tennessee out on Real Foot Lake. So it's one of the world's largest natural lakes. So we did a lot of waterfowl hunting out there, and I went on a trip with my father-in-law. And it was stupid cold. Like, I know we talk about cold, but out on the water out there, it gets cold. Especially like it was last week. And you know, when you run out on a boat on Real Foot Lake, it's a flooded swamp. It's a flooded cypress forest is what it is. So really kind of dangerous when you get out there if you don't know what you're doing. But riding with a guide, and we were out there, and you know, just an incredible day. The weather kind of turned and the sun came out and all the fog kind of lifted off the lake. And we actually ended up having a lot of groups of ducks come in that we ended up shooting. But I remember the one duck I remember shooting that if I could go back and shoot him again, I would do it over and over every single day. It was a male bufflehead, and he was a little bit out of range, but it was, you know, it was a poke, as they say. It was like a 45, 50 yard shot out into the open water, and I shot him and he crashed down and he skipped across the water. And, you know, next thing you know, you hear a screech from the tree behind you. Out on Real Foot Lake, you know exactly what that is, and it's a bald eagle.
No!
So before I could even get the boat or the dog or anybody out, this bald eagle lit out of the tree behind us and went and picked up my duck. And, man, he was pretty. If I would have gotten him, I would have loved to have him mounted. But, you know, yeah, that we make jokes about the bald eagles out there. I love seeing bald eagles everywhere, but, you know, we make jokes about bald eagles. You know, you can only shoot one, and if you do, you know, you get to wear pajamas for the rest of your life, and
you're down.
You get a bag limit of one, and you know, but yeah, if I could have a hunt over again, it'd be that day. I mean, we shot a bunch of groups of ducks and just had a really, really good time and had quality conversations with my father-in-law. There's something about being in the outdoors that kind of lowers your guard and just kind of reminds you of all the past experiences you've had in your life. And just kind of the conversation flows a lot easier. And so if I could have it again, I would definitely go back to that hunt specifically.
Mine, besides my son, when he killed his, that's what kept me into hunting. But I guess it's not really my hunt, but I helped my brother shot a really wide 9 point. He was like 19 to 20 inches wide. And here in Tennessee, that's a good deer. And he shot him. It was during muzzleloader. I couldn't hunt opening morning because I was working. And he shot it. And he texted me. He was like, "Hey, I've shot a good one." And it's kind of funny because he said, "I've shot this thing 4 times. And I was thinking, this is with a muzzleloader. And he's hit this deer 3 of the 4 times. He has hit it and dropped the deer, which was during the middle of the rut. So they're a relentless animal. I mean, they can survive. And he lost the blood trail and lost the deer. And he called me that night. And he said, "Hey, after church tomorrow, would you," this on a Saturday, but he called me that night and said, "After church, would you go with me out there to find the deer?" And I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "I want you to find it." And it was cold. And I said, "Where do you remember last seeing him at?" So that's where we went to. And then we followed it. And the only place that could have went was to the creek, because the other side of the creek was straight up and down. And then we found actually where he had tried to go up. And we looked and looked, and we had a young teenager. My brother coaches and teaches high school, so he had one of his football players with him. We're just walking the creek bank, and he said, "I think I see some antlers over there." And I had seen it, but I thought it was just, you know, trash or just a limb or something hanging up. And I seen the white belly. It had swollen up. One of the shots, he had gut shot it, so the belly was swollen up. And my brother takes off running. I mean, it's cold. He takes off running through the creek over there to find his deer, and he's screaming and hollering, "I found it." You know, and this was just like 7, 8 years ago. And I would love to do that all over again, just to see his reaction and just know how to see his passion for the hunt. But when I got to finally go over to him, it took me a while, because I'm not running through the creek, even though I was happy for him because it was cold. But we took pictures and everything, and he was smiling from ear to ear. But that just goes to show you that, you know, you don't give up on it. We knew he hit it good. Just when would it finally stop? Because he had hit it three. We know 3 out of the 4 times that he shot it with a muzzleloader, because he had dropped it twice. But it's hanging on the wall now, and it's a great story to tell with it. And that's probably my favorite.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And with that, folks, we're going to wrap up our time with Aaron and Josh from Oliver Trailer from down there in Tennessee. And this was fun. We shared some good insights about hunting, what to do, make memories. And I just appreciate both you guys being willing to be on Hutch and Hunting. And folks, hutchandhunting.com is your go-to research consultant for the state of Colorado for all big game species. So reach out to me, touch base with me at hutchandhunting@gmail.com. And I'd love to chit chat with you and see if I can help you be more successful in 2024 in the great state of Colorado. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bruce.